your host, Meena here at Telecast. Welcome, Ayaz.
Hi, Meena. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How have you been?
I've been on top of the world. Pretty hectic now in Indian cricket and, being in India. So, great fun.
Yeah. There are lots of things happening, but, before we head on to the big news, which was IPL, I guess, over the weekend, the last week where we saw one of the finest test matches being played, would you agree, between India and South Africa?
In many ways, yes. I thought, the test match and the series was headed for a, humdinger of a climax. The last day was a bit of a disappointment. At the end of the day, I think it was a fair result for both teams because it was a magnificent test series. But I thought just a little, perhaps both teams could have shown a little aggression. South Africa could have declared a little earlier, maybe about 20, 25 minutes before close on the fourth day. And India could have made a slightly more, stronger pitch for a win. But the one thing which worries me, Meenal, is that if India wants to win, it has to be Sehwag who provides the lead when it's batting. And it can't be completely one-man centric, you know what I'm saying? So,
exactly.
That should be something that the think tank worries about.
Because, see, I don't think the kind of pitch that was there on the Newlands pitch suited Sehwag's stroke play or his way, the way he bats. He just goes out there and he will treat the ball as he sees it. That requires a lot of patience, and we all know patience is not his forte. So I think we are over-relying on him to get us the impetus or, to get going. And suddenly then when he gets out, everything is gone in a shell and we look for a draw. I think a lot of, I'm following Twitter and Facebook, a lot of people were disappointed that India didn't go or push for a win. And there was this 50% who were saying that, okay, India is going to lose and collapse. And there was this 50% which were hell-bent saying that, no, India will definitely draw, but they should go for the win. I mean, that sentiment was very, it was black and white, very clear among people.
You know what I found, my experience of the Twitter world and digital world is it's divided pretty much into two. One is the cynical and the other is the hopelessly optimistic. So,
Is that how you term us?
No, I'll tell you, it's funny, but that's my experience. The more rational or the reasonable view is there, but it's the minority view. It's right. Because the expectations are so high or so low, So that kind of plays up even further on the Twitter world and whatever else. But having said that, at the end of the day, neither South Africa nor India, it was a needle battle in the earlier two tests. And for 4 days of the third test, neither team actually, I would believe, wanted to lose. And with justification, because you don't play for almost a month to lose the series in one session. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's the first time we've drawn. I mean, we've not lost a series in South Africa, and so that was a good achievement.
It's a very good achievement. No. Make no mistake. I'm just saying that if you are the number one team in the world and you have to make that effort a little, sometimes. And if South Africa wants to be recognized as the best team, they have to make that effort.
Yeah, both went on a defensive somewhere fourth day. I thought, when we were 64 for 4, we had South Africa reeling at 130 for 6, that Dhoni would attack and probably, keep Bhaji and Zahir going, and suddenly field was spread out and I think we lost the plot there. Similarly, Smith, he just waited on and on. He was not confident of his bowlers, and that's surprising considering he had Spen and Mortal with him. So all that, I think that last one and a half, one day and the last session kind of was a kind of an anti-climax for everybody.
Yeah, it takes a lot of bravado. It takes a lot of courage to go out in the last day and say, I'm going to chase down. I know that the West Indies would have done it. For instance, at Lord's in 1984, I think, through Gordon Greenidge and gang, they chased down more than 300 runs on the last day on the Lord's track, where both of them had taken 8 wickets earlier, and Greenidge made a double 100. And, Australia have done it often enough. They've chased, at Cape Town itself, 300 plus. But those were the all-time great teams. Now, my point is this, I'm just being theoretical about it. If India want to be recognized as one of the great teams in international cricket in history, then these are the kind of matches, if you win, then you will kind of scare the other teams when you meet them again.
Well, because that's the other debate that went on. People were like, no, we are just hanging on and clinging on to the number one ranking. We are just scraping through. We are not dominating. And the problem lies is, if we see our bowlers, is we don't have a bowler who can frighten the opposition or the batsman like a Spen or like a McGrath did. And the thing is, till we find that one good bowler, we're not going to dominate because we don't have a great bowling attack. We just rely on Zahir and Harbhajan, and that's not a good sign for a team who wants to dominate and be continuously number one.
In a sense, you're right. I think what needs to be done, therefore, is that we have to sharpen our attack. And I think the self-belief is there. In the past, Indian teams would have lost this test match. The fact that we didn't lose this test match or the series is great credit to Dhoni and everybody else. And, having said whatever I've said, you and I have been saying this, but if we were players, we might think three times, because why should you want to lose? So
exactly.
Not to blame them. Yeah. But that said, I think you're right about the fact that, if there's one thing which emerged from this series is, India's attack was not better than South Africa's. And Zahir's inclusion made a big difference. When he was not there, the attack looked weak. Harbhajan came into his own, picked up a lot of wickets in one match. So between the two of them, they had about, 25 wickets in the series. And Zahir didn't play one match. Shrishant, I thought, was one of the finds of the or rediscoveries of the tour.
Yeah, but he needs to be a little more consistent.
Yeah, we need to actually kind of put up strong bowling performances more regularly, because ultimately, to win a match, you need to take 20 wickets.
Now, going back, I asked the series, your players of the series for India and South Africa, if you had to pick two each. I mean, it was
Callis'
series, all know that.
I was about to tell you that if I had to pick one person, it would be Callis. But obviously, Sachin had a great series with the bat, and Dave Stein with the ball. So if I have to pick two players from both teams, I would actually pick Callis and Stein from South Africa, and Sachin, and in my case, it would be Zahir more than Bhaji. So Bhaji got the more wickets, but Zahir missed the test match. And his arrival into the Indian attack kind of turned things around.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a word on Gambhir, because when we were thinking, we were doing a preview, and I felt that Gambhir was the one person, because he didn't have great performances this year, that he would actually come good in South Africa, and he did. And I absolutely loved the way he fought out on the last day, despite, being injured. Speaks volumes of the guy's character.
No, I mean, when you think about it, what you're saying is right. Look, we expect, magnificent performances from Sachin. So in that sense, it's not a surprise. He got 200 and whatever else. Mm-hmm. But the return to form of Gautam Gambhir, you're right. I mean, I stand corrected, because that was one of the highlights of the tour. The way he battled, and, he's made runs in virtually all the matches and the innings that he's played. He missed one test match. Made runs in the first, made runs in the second. In the second, it could be said that without his, kind of stubborn batting, India could have been in big trouble.
Big trouble. And it will do him very good for his confidence, because, for the World Cup, he'll go with the new found confidence in himself. He was beginning to doubt himself, is what I got the feeling during New Zealand series. But now, I think with the World Cup due next, I think he should be one of our best players to look forward to.
Well, immediately, I mean, even without returning back home, he's been the highest paid player in the IPL, so he's already made some headway. He's already made some headway. And you're right. I mean, India wants Gambhir to be in form, because he's the most adaptable of the players. Sehwag bats in one gear, barring Sachin, who's so versatile.
Yeah.
Dravid and Lakshman don't play the one-day game for India. So, Yuvraj has his own way of playing. He plays also in a certain gear. Gambhir and Sachin remain your two most versatile batsmen. They can switch gears. They can defend. They can attack. They can build an innings. They can destroy. Whatever it is.
Yeah, they see the situation, gauge it, and, change the stance. I think that's the best. I think those two will be key when we start our World Cup campaign.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, the old man, he's not slowing down, Sachin Tendulkar. Gautam Gambhir, I think he's reaching, actually, though he's made so many runs over the last 2-3 years, I think he's actually reaching his peak form now. This is the age, 28, 29, 30 is when batsmen really mature, they peak. And I think now, with the incentive of the IPL $2.4 million, and I would imagine, and I would hope it's an incentive, he will see this as a recognition of his talent and his contribution to Indian cricket, and go from strength to strength.
Strength to strength, very true. And now the test series is over, and our only practice before the World Cup fortunately, we are playing South Africa. You think we will go full strength? Because that's what they've been talking about.
For the one-day series, I think, look, you know, this is the final lap before the World Cup. So, India would want to win the series, win it convincingly. And, you know, beating South Africa anywhere, forget about beating South Africa, and South Africa is not easy. You have to be at full tilt or in good form, full form. So I would imagine that they will go with the full strength team.
Gambhir and Sehwag are both out, I guess, because of the injuries.
Yes.
So our batsmen are pretty much, you know, the lineup is there. Virat, UV, Raina, Vijay, Sachin will make it. Between Pathan and Rohit Sharma, do you think there will be a toss-up between those two?
No, my feeling is that both will play because now both are, you know, in again, like Gambhir, very prized picks for the IPL and therefore also part of the Indian ODI World Cup probables. I think they should be in the top 15 when the final list is announced. So they are going to be crucial players playing at home. I think both of them are the big hitters, big strikers of the ball. Rohit a little more organized in his technique. Pathan completely explosive. Both can bowl a bit. Pathan bowls more often. So I think they are very vital cogs. And if I was Dhoni, I would want to test them out as much as possible before the World Cup.
In the bowling, do you think it will be Zaheer, Nehra, Praveen Kumar, or will there be a toss-up between Munaf and Praveen and Srisan might not get a look in? What do you think?
That's an interesting query because I wish I had an answer. The way Srisan has bowled in South Africa, and if he can get his late outswing and if he can control himself and his bowling, then you know he could be very dangerous. So in which case, I would actually put him a little ahead of Munaf. Maybe not ahead of Praveen Kumar in Indian conditions because Praveen with his late swing also is very effective. Now, the great virtue is that he's you know, very miserly in giving away runs. He's more accurate.
Yeah.
He's not a swing bowler. He's more a seam bowler. Munaf's big problem is his fielding and his utter lack of batting ability.
Yeah.
So while Praveen is a bit of an all-rounder and Srisan can go mad once in a while with the bat, Munaf is not known for this. Yeah, exactly.
And I have a feeling that, you know, Ashwin should be tried out because we saw him in the IPL, he was very good. I think Dhoni should give him at least two matches against South Africa. What do you feel before, you know, he takes the plunge if he gets selected for the World Cup?
You know, you're spot on. So I think that Ashwin is probably the find of the last year. And thanks to, he's come through the ranks through the IPL in that sense for public recognition. But he's been bowling very well. But he seems to me to be a big star in the making. He's got the temperament, he's got the variety, he's got the skills. If he is finally in the 15, with no disrespect to Harbhajan Singh, who's been a champion cricketer, this guy is going to keep him on his toes and probably end up being a match winner for India too.
See how the five one-day series goes. On South Africa's side, there's no Gibbs. Who do you think would be the most destructive batsman to watch out for? Who's going to take over Gibbs? Because Gibbs, as an opener, was very destructive. He could just change the game.
He's also now, self-destructive. He wrote a book where he criticized it.
Absolutely. So, I was not going to go there.
he's had his innings and I think finally he's probably decided that this is the way he wants to bow out because he should have known that after writing that book, he's never going to be playing for South Africa.
Exactly.
In the World Cup, look, don't underestimate Smith himself because, he's an explosive batsman. Callis will be, you know, Callis is Callis. What more can one say? But I think the key players there in one day is the two of them, Hashim Amla and AB de Villiers.
Yeah,
and nobody thought either of them were great one-day potential or material a few years back. Everybody thought that they were great, you know, they could be test match players, especially Hashim. But he's been a revelation. You know, he's been actually the most successful batsman in limited overs cricket as well as test match cricket over the last year.
And there's this big news about Imran Tahir finally getting the green signal to play for South Africa. You think he will get a look in? I think they should try him out because in Indian conditions, he could prove a handful.
I think they would think along those lines. Imran Tahir, I think he bowls leg spin. And, he's probably going to be of value because South Africa, they've got Botha. And they've got, Van der Merwe. These are the kind of guys. But they will need to have a squad with, I think, three spinners.
Oh, okay.
you know, and maybe four fast bowlers. So, you know, and then seven or eight batsmen. I think 16 is the number 15. So, if they choose a third spinner, I think Imran Tahir is in. Otherwise, probably he's not. But he is probably an investment for the future.
Just that, you know, I think he's in his 30s and, you know, that could probably just give him a few years to play. So,
well, the 40s is the new 20s, as they say. So, you're never too old.
That's what Sachin Tendulkar, right? I asked nobody else.
Of course.
The way he's going, we can actually...
Well, Brian Lara wanted to come back and play in the IPL, you know, so...
Yeah, but then not many people were keen on it. Oh, well, before we move to the two new stories, you know, the IPL and we go ahead to the next section. But the big story has been the Ashes win by England, and so comprehensive. Thrice they've beaten Australia by an innings. I don't think Aussie suffered that kind of a defeat at home. Really worrisome factor for Australia?
I think so. I mean, it's worrisome to the extent that everybody knew that the Aussies were in decline because there's been a, you know, shift from the balance of power has shifted or has been shifting for the past 2-3 years. You know, you can't afford to lose players like McGrath, Vaughan, Hayden, Mark Waugh, you know, over the last, I mean, so many of them, Damien Martin and whoever else, Justin Langer, and not have an effect. It has to have an effect. Otherwise, it will be unreal. Now, the extent of the difference is the issue. I think Ricky Ponting has been brave. He's been soldiering along. But I think that Australia need to look, have a hard look at perhaps some of their... You know, they've taken so much for granted because they were such a great team. There was this tremendous sense of belief that our domestic structure or their domestic structure could always replace champion cricketers with champion cricketers. In the meanwhile, the other teams have become, you know, they've seen Australia and they said this is the team to beat and have matched their talents.
Correct.
So you've got players from India and England who play like the Aussies, think like the Aussies, and perhaps are better than the Aussies.
There is something that they've lacked is bench strength. They were struggling to find spinners. They were picking random people. And that is something I think Australia has to look into. This is not the Australia we know. And we need them to play well because they're one of the best teams and we need the competition right now when Test cricket is looking so good.
Yes, I think so. I mean, everybody, like when the West Indies went into decline, it was a sad time for international cricket. Now, Australia, I think the rigors and the structure, domestic structure is stronger, so they may not have such a prolonged kind of period in, you know, in the dumps. I think Australia will bounce back stronger and, you know, sooner. But having said that, I don't think they will, any team will have such a long extended field run as the West Indies and Australia have had over the last, say, 25, 30 years, because standards have become better. People, you know, because of live coverage, kids know everything about everybody. They train themselves. They grow up into a system where they have more self-belief. They can identify weaknesses and strengths. And therefore, you'll find cricketers from India better than they were in terms of mind and skills. And also from England. And also from South Africa. You know, these are the teams which are, and Sri Lanka. And don't discount the maverick team, Pakistan, you know. I mean, they just beat Pakistan into pulp. I mean, they beat New Zealand into pulp in 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, we don't. Provided they just get away from all the match fixing, everything, the cloud that surrounds their cricket.
Well, it depends on what side of the bed they get up from.
Yeah, exactly. We just pray for the betterment of Test cricket that, you know, they get up on the right
on
side.
On the right side, yeah.
They come and compete and we so need that right now. Ayaz, two players have been most talked about. Rahul Dravid and Ricky Ponting, both all-time greats, both the best, among the best players for their team. And everybody's talking about their failures. Ponting, they probably are saying he's on his way out. I find that is a bit too early. I think he's got another year or two. And Dravid, don't we need to sustain, be with him till England 2011?
Well, why only England and why not Australia? Look, both Rahul and Ricky Ponting have been, you know, we don't even need to spell out their greatness because they've been around for 15, 16 years. You know, one guy has got 12,000 runs, the other guy is not too far behind or ahead. Both are very similar in their run getting. Their averages, Ricky Ponting is ahead in terms of number of centuries. But in terms of value to the team, there's not much to choose. I mean, Ricky Ponting is arguably Australia's greatest batsman after John Bradman, and that's saying, you know, a lot. And Rahul Dravid, you know, we may say whatever we want about Sachin and Lakshman and Ganguly, but none of these guys would have been where they were without Rahul's resolute batsmanship, you know, for years and years and years in the most trying circumstances.
Yeah. Do you feel the media or, you know, generally the views that, you know, we're calling for their heads too early, there's no need to panic, there's still a lot of cricket left for both of them?
You know, it's a state of mind situation, Minal, because at the end of the day, both are 36, 37, that kind of age group, where, and I know, you know, talking about this to somebody like, say, Sunil Gavaskar, who retired at 38 when he was still in form, making runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had passed his 10,000 run that year and made 100 at Lord's in the MCC bicentenary and made 100 in the, his only 100 in one-day matches. And then he retired. And I asked him, I said, you know, you were so good. Why did you quit then? He said, you know, why he decided to retire is, one, you know, he kept asking himself every day when on the field, do I really want to chase that ball and save it from a four? When your mind is fatigued is when the problem starts. So it's not about ability. We all know Ricky Ponting's ability or Rahul Dravid's. But if the mind is jaded and if they feel that, you know, it's not as exciting, then, you know, it's time to go. Now, is it time for them to go? They answer that question best. But I hope they do it. You know, sometimes the biggest grief for a sports person, however great and major you are, is that most of them who have been great timers of the ball and, you know, whether playing tennis or cricket or whatever else, seem to lose their sense of timing when it comes to retirement.
Absolutely.
And we've had this classic example of, you know, poor Saurav Ganguly being dumped badly in the IPL auction. India have overseas engagements through this year. They go to England after the IPL. As of now, my assessment is we don't have a replacement for Rahul Dravid. As of now, I've seen Cheteshwar Pujara, we've seen Raina, we've seen so-and-so, and we can say, look, you know, Sachin is in form and Lakshman is in great form and Sehwag is irreplaceable and Gambhir is in the peak of his career. But can Dravid be replaced? On the evidence of what we've seen, I don't think so. Likewise for Ricky Ponting, you know, we've watched the entire Australian batting lineup several times in the Ashes series. And even in seemingly out of form, Ricky Ponting looked better than all of them. Though he didn't make the runs. You know, sometimes you need a little luck. The pressure on him was too much. But who made runs? I mean, apart from Mike Hussey, you know, so.
Yeah. Again, I say cross our fingers and, you know, they decide when it's best. And I hope if they decide to go, they go out with the kind of aplomb that they walked into this.
Yes, I would love these players to go out with their heads held high rather than, you know, some guy trying to shoo them out. This is terrible.
Exactly. We wouldn't want that. Ayaz, you tweeted about your new initiative with Hangama.com, and that's something I wanted to ask you about and so that you speak to our listeners as well. CricketExchange.com. So, you know, how is it only for the World Cup? And, you know, just give us an idea about it. It seemed very interesting when I tried to log on to the site and check it out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's something that actually the Hangama people who have been, you know, we've been talking to each other for a while, they've come up with the idea, and I found it exciting. So it's not only for the World Cup, it's in perpetuity in that sense. But the World Cup seems like a good time to start it. And it's based on, you know, they've got algorithms which will determine the movement of stock prices of players depending on the articles they write, plus what followers of Cricket Stock Exchange think. So for instance, if you buy a stock and, you know, the price will vary, as much as it will vary with what I write. So it's not just my saying or writing about it which will determine movement and price, but also the kind of demand that it generates. You may have a complete disagreement with me. And, you know, you might decide that, you know, I'm talking through my hat, so therefore you want to do something differently, and that will also affect the stock price.
Oh, that's interesting. So I will definitely tell all the listeners to log on to this, and it seems a very interesting initiative.
So yeah, it seems so. Let's see. It seems like a lot of fun. So we'll have to just, it needs about a week more of tweaking, and then we're on.
Oh, that'll be great. So I hope you'll tweet it, and we'll just pick it up from there and let everybody know.
Of course.
Ayaz, lastly, we opened the new year with the death of somebody so important for Indian cricket, for mainly for Mumbai cricket, somebody whose name forms a major part of my, you know, old, when there was no internet, I used to collect cricket articles from the Times and from Lok Satta, and Pradeep Vijayakar's name featured prominently. It was a big shock to everybody. You have been in the with him for so long. You know, you guys have been peers and colleagues, seniors. Could you just tell our listeners before we end the show as to, you know, sort of a small tribute for Pradeep?
Well, look, I knew Pradeep for almost my entire career. When I joined Sports Week in midday, he had been through that route and joined the Times. So he's about, you know, a little bit senior to me, 5-6 years. What I have learned from Pradeep is that you're never too old to learn, you know. So that was his greatest contribution to me as a professional journalist. A man of many passions and many interests, and more so at the grassroots level. You know, his big obsession was cricket, because he played a, you know, mean game of cricket, I must tell you that.
Okay.
He could bat, he could bowl. He played for St. Xavier's College when he was studying there. In the hurly-burly, in the rat race of cricket coverage, perhaps he lost out a little, but it never deterred him. He covered snooker, he covered table tennis, swimming, and a lot of the young people, including world champions like Geet Sethi, will tell you that because Pradeep used to follow them and write about them, at least they found mention in papers, you know.
Yes.
He was a guy who would cover Maidan cricket or Maidan sports in junior most. It never bothered him that he was covering an international match or not, which he used to do. He was on All India Radio covering cricket matches, he was writing, if not main match reports, he was writing color copy, he was doing interviews, he was meeting people. But the quintessential, you know, old-fashioned classical journalist who was sniffing around, looking for stories and doing a good job of it. And I think that's what is lacking in today's profession. Today, everybody is chasing a Tendulkar or a Dravid for a story, and, you know, and one story does not differ too much from the other. You know, who is writing about the 15-year-old who's got 200 runs and nobody knows about the guy? So Pradeep Vijayakar, at the age of 58, 59, 50, 60, whatever his age, he would go out and do those stories. And it was an object lesson. I mean, when I was sports editor of Times of India, and he used to use my colleagues, and I used to always marvel, and, you know, he used to always tell me, look, this is one aspect of sports, which is your big time, international, big ticket sports. The other is, you can't be a big ticket player unless there's somebody writing about you when you're a kid.
And that's a big learning for most young, you know, journalists who are trying to make their careers in the sporting field, that he's one of the people that you should probably read and follow.
He left behind a splendid legacy. It's very, very tragic that he had to, you know, he had to pass away just, you know, 3-4 days before he was due for retirement, and, you know, looking forward to spend time with his family, his wife, his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And spend more time on the maidan, looking at young, budding sportspersons from India.
They say he had a great knack of spotting talent. I mean, that was one of his...
He was a man very curious by nature. So, you would always go and try and find out a little more. So, you know, that's the hallmark of a very good journalist. You have to be curious. If you know everything, then you're dead. Brain dead, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And seriously, big loss. And, you know, we woke up reading about it, and it was quite a shock for, I think, most cricket fans who followed him and read him over the years. And it's been a big loss, obviously. I think more to your journalism, group. I think your...
No, absolutely. I think it's one of the sad days for Indian journalism, and especially in Mumbai, for those who've known, at least the byline. You may not have known people may not have known Pradeep Vijayakar personally. But even as a byline, I think he was so familiar, because he was writing almost, you know, every second day.
Ayaz, thanks so much for taking the time out once again. When we meet again in 2 weeks, the World Cup will be just a month away. So we should start looking at the teams. I think the teams should get announced by then. I hope that most...
Yeah, by the 15th, I think the teams will be announced. So,
They'll be announced. So we'll have a look at all the squads, see the strengths, and we'll try to go through how the format works, try to educate the listeners how it's going to be. And let's try and see... Who would be your predictions, you know, in the initial rounds to get through? Because I think at the knockout stage, it's more of who plays better on that day. So that's going to be tough to predict. But at least till the last four, we can try to review our teams and see who's going to land up in the last four.
Lovely, Minal. Thanks. We'll do that.
Yeah? Okay, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Ayaz.
Thanks. So, bye-bye.
That was us in conversation with Ayaz Memon. You can follow him on Twitter at The Cricketwala. And you can follow me on my cricket blog, The Sea of Three. So, bye for now and join us again in a fortnight. Thank you. Bye.